Today's podcast is the first in a series of three covering communities of practice, or COPs as they're also known. Historically, they have existed under various names: clubs, guilds, trade unions, communities of interest, technology interest groups, affinity groups, and yes, communities of practice. Whatever their name, they exist so that like-minded people can form relationships and exchange knowledge about a given topic. Recent interest in communities of practice has increased as an aging workforce has retired, taking with it tacit knowledge built up over time through experience and reflection. The workers left behind must take up the slack. But with the current economic environment, companies often do not backfill positions, choosing to run lean. Hence, both management and practitioners have become interested in COPs. Management, because they must make do with a younger, less experienced workforce, and practitioners, because they must quickly develop expertise to do their jobs. Expertise that normally takes years of experience to acquire. I would like to discuss two factors that are important for establishing and maintaining successful communities of practice. Factor number one is to establish COPs using both top-down and bottom-up approaches. Corporate strategists, in trying to cope with retirements and the need to run lean, realize that COPs are one way to facilitate knowledge transfer. Their interest is in making sure that the strategic direction of the organization is achieved through a skilled workforce. The tendency is for upper management to adopt a top-down approach to establishing COPs by finding a sponsor who appoints a chairperson, who forms a team, who then drafts a charter. Once the charter has been drafted, leaders expect practitioners to immediately join the fledgling community. This approach results in heavy organization that too soon defines the way the community of practice should and will operate, thus alienating practitioners, driving them away from the formal structure to informal ones. This approach also neglects an important aspect of community development: the fact that many communities form from the bottom up. Practitioners who have an interest in a topic naturally seek out other like-minded people. Our experience is that many of these grassroots efforts already exist. Rather than creating a top-down community that alienates these existing grassroots efforts, they should be embraced. The existing relationships that have already been established should be honored and supported. Because COPs are communities, and because relationships are at the heart of community, relationships that already exist through grassroots efforts form an excellent foundation for a full-blown community of practice. Our advice, then, is to combine top-down and bottom-up approaches. Form a team whose first action is to determine whether any grassroots efforts already exist. If so, the team would enlist support from these efforts by asking them to participate in the development and or review of a charter. In this way, both the strategic needs of the organization and the grassroots efforts of the personnel would be honored and aligned. Factor number two is to strike a balance between organization and organism by establishing key roles and maintaining permeable boundaries. Many have observed that communities possess features of organization and organism. Too little organization results in inefficiency and redundancy. Too much organization is stifling. The initial enthusiasm and informality that encouraged creativity and attracted members in the first place can be smothered through bureaucracy. Our experience is that successful COPs possess at least a minimal structure that includes three key roles, but enables the bulk of the members to maintain relatively unfettered association, what we call permeable boundaries. The first key role is sponsor, the person who links the COP to the larger business context, the strategic direction. This person is also responsible for removing barriers and obstacles that are preventing the community from thriving, while keeping an otherwise hands-off approach, letting the community itself determine how it operates. The next role is chairperson, who provides leadership within the community and interfaces between it and the sponsor. Ideally, this role emerges from within the community of practice itself, although initially it may be staffed by someone appointed by the sponsor until the community establishes its own identity. In any case, the chairperson must be recognized and respected as a leader within the community, as well as respected by the sponsor. The final role, a facilitator, must be someone who can communicate and facilitate communication. He or she is very valuable in making sure that members are heard, in facilitating meetings, in enabling communication among community members, and in communicating from the community to the larger organization. Although these roles are permanent, people may rotate through them. The community's culture should determine how the roles are staffed. But apart from these key roles, the rest of the members should participate at whatever level they desire, even feeling free to come and go. In other words, the community boundaries need to be permeable. Membership should be considered in the loosest sense. Allowing the boundaries to remain permeable is important because it allows the community to address important topics, develop solutions, and be flexible enough to stay together despite changing emphases. Community members typically fall into two categories. One is those members for whom the community's topic constitutes the major part of their job. These people come to the communities to share their experiences, to ask community for solutions to problems they're currently facing, or to deepen their knowledge or improve their expertise in tools, techniques, and processes related to the community's topic. The other category is people who are merely interested in the topic, possibly because they are contemplating a career move, because they must interface or work with someone who is involved in that topic, or simply because they want to find out more about the topic. By keeping the boundaries permeable, interested parties may come and go as topics interest them, and the community can address important topics as they emerge. And finally, they can even focus on developing solutions to important problems or refining tools, techniques, or processes that have become or are becoming important within their organization. In summary, communities of practice, or COPs, are valuable ways for people to share experience and expertise, solve problems, and increase an organization's social and intellectual capital. Establish COPs using both top-down and bottom-up strategies. Your organization may already have a number of COPs in embryonic form. So before starting one, survey the landscape to find out what communities already exist. In addition, strike a balance between organization and organism by filling key roles such as sponsor, chairperson, and facilitator, but keep the boundaries permeable so that members and non-members alike can come and go as they have something to contribute and see something they need. This is John Scherer for the IEEE Professional Communication Society.